and welcome to another episode of Success at Scale. It's 2024, a new year. We got a whole bunch of exciting things planned at CES, NAMM, and so much more. A lot to talk about, but today we've got the Success at Scale podcast, which is the podcast that delivers stories of professionals, entrepreneurs, and industry leaders providing insights on how to turn your ideas into impactful results. I'm your host, Greg Stein, and today we are privileged to have Mr. Jonathan Weiner with us. He's an accomplished education director. He's an audio engineer. He's a producer. He's a mastering engineer. He's everything that you could ask for. He's had experience with iZotope and so many more companies along the way. This is a guy who represents innovation and excellence, and I got to tell you, I'm super excited to have him on the show with us today. Without further ado, Jonathan, tell us about you and what you're up to these days.
Oh my goodness. How much time do we have here? when you say tell you about me, the first thing that comes to mind, quite frankly, is I'm astonished to be living in a world where people actually find the intersection of music and technology interesting. You know, growing up as a kid and wanting to be a rock star, wanting to be Jimi Hendrix or wanting to be the Beatles or, you know, all of that. It just seemed like sort of flight of fancy. It was all about the sort of marquee star lifestyle and about the music. But how in the world it would ever become a real thing? If you had asked me at the age of whatever, 13 or something like that, I'd be like, I don't know how this is all going to work. So here we are today. Living in this amazing world where technology is exploding, music is exploding, musical genres are exploding. The new technology, I think, is really threatening disruption in ways that we don't even understand yet. So I'm excited to be witnessing all of this. And at the same time, you know, I teach full time at Berklee College of Music. So I'm constantly talking to the Ute. About like, you know, what's next. And they're just trying to wrap their brains around trying to realize their dreams. So that's kind of fascinating. I'm still making records, building a new mastering studio, and working on the next edition of my book, you know, so I've got a few things going on, Greg.
That's pretty awesome, man. I mean, when you think about the new technology that's here, I mean, you know, the combination of AI and, you know, some of the other, you know, digital tools that are now available, you know, you look at it as a threat or you look at it as an opportunity or both?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that that's not really the right question. And it's the obvious question, right? I mean, we're always sort of trying to assess things, but in that way, but I've really come to accept. I've come to this place of acceptance in my life where, you know, the world is doing what the world is doing, and we got to figure out a way to come to terms with it and incorporate it. So I guess the answer is yes. You know, disruption means certain things go by the boards, certain things get lost. There, you know, things change that wish that we didn't or that they didn't change. And then there are all the new surprises that are like, wow, you know, I no longer have to do this boring piece of work that I used to have to do because I can automate it. Or, wow, I can, you know, sing a line into my phone and this machine will turn it into a sax line that sounds like David Sanborn played it. Or, I mean, it's wild. So I think the thing that we have to do is pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, we have to take a look at what's happening and we have to talk back to the people who are making these tools to make sure that they're making tools that that we can use and that really represent, the expertise and the talent that is already present in the world and reflects back to people something that they can use to make their work better as opposed to telling them what they need, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's an exciting time, and yet we also have to pay attention and we got to be vigilant.
I'm totally with you. I'm sure that this is not a new conversation we're having, by the way. You know, you have this image behind you. And right. I'm sure that as some of those tools were born, this conversation was probably happening as well. Although this is a little bit different than the past in terms of creativity, authenticity, originality. Like for me, you know, that's going to become more important than ever. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's not so different from when MIDI was born. I mean, there are aspects of generative AI that are different from anything that we've dealt with before, partly because of the scale and the data mining aspect of it. But MIDI, you know, contained a lot of the same kinds of challenges and presented the same kinds of opportunities. And you know, the band in a box, I mean, talk about, you know, people were like, that's the enemy of creativity. And therefore what? We shouldn't have MIDI? I mean, you know, look what happened, right?
Right. Well said.
But definitely, I think, you know, we are always reminded that like talent and creativity and, as you said, authenticity ultimately matter. You know, it doesn't matter what the technology is. You know, you can create something that's an imitation, and that has a limited shelf life and a limited play and a limited market. But if you want to create something that has legs and something that has appeal and engages people, you know, be Billie Eilish, be something different.
Right.
Be Childish Gambino. I mean, you know, these are people that machines just don't make. That's not a band in a box.
Well, it's interesting, right? So all of this, you've been part of the product development life cycle, specifically at iZotope and probably many other groups as well. But, you know, my question to you is, how do you think about product development, especially during this time? You know, how do you kind of formulate your ideas and your thought process as it pertains to technologies that we don't even know yet?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two ways to come at it. You try to find the sweet spot that is the intersection between both. One is identifying problems that need to be solved, you know, not creating a solution that's looking for a problem, because that's, generally speaking, not a recipe for success. But also understanding what is unusual and new about a new technology and what does it have to offer. You know, I'll pull out of the air source separation, this idea of demixing. You know, neat trick. I mean, actually, you know, since I've been an audio engineer, people have been wanting to take vocals out to create karaoke tracks or, you know, sing over for wedding bands. Or, I mean,
yeah,
like,
us this drummers is not love a, that too, a, by the way.
Right. So it's yeah, there you go. So it's a, you know, it's a real problem. It's a real thing. And now we can solve it so long as you build a way to address it that's actually usable and useful. So this is kind of the perfect marriage of a new technology and an old problem and a better way of addressing it. So, you know, I think this is true of all these new generative tools. You know, we can do crazy things, but if nobody can use them, or if they're actually not anything that anybody wants to do. And I can think of some companies that I'm not going to name that have made these amazing tools that are over-engineered and do things that nobody either can figure out how to do or wants to do. I admire like the ingenuity and the intelligence behind these developments are incredible. But yeah, I mean, during my time at iZotope, we thought very hard about the market. We thought very hard about workflows. We thought very hard about what people wanted to do. And then, you know, how can we innovate either in the UX? It didn't even have to be a new technology. It could just be an approach. Like, I, you know, not to get too sort of nerdy, but you're familiar with the notion of the spectral display where you can see like the frequencies
Yes.
that are contained in music. Marrying that to the controls of an equalizer is something that never existed before. Mm. I mean, it never existed. It was like, you know, you had to slide something around and listen and sort of understand what was going on. It's like, well, if we could also validate what we were hearing by looking at something, by having a visualization, that would be cool. And that was a real innovation. It didn't really involve new technology per se, but it was a new approach to interacting with the technology. And there are examples of that that I could cite, you know, in many other contexts as well, but that's a kind of a simple, easily digestible one. So I think that's really where the magic is.
So let's talk about bridging, you know, the gap or actually taking the learnings from, you know, your professional experience and then bringing that to students in the educational world. Like, how do you think about kind of translating your methodology into an academic environment?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing you have to do, if you've been at this for any length of time, you know that you have to adapt and you have to be agile and you have to pay attention to what's coming down the road that's new and useful, what sort of represents the current state of the art, and then what are the things that we need to carry forward that are best practices. And that, you know, it's always a bit of a moving target because there are always going to be new technologies that give us new capabilities. You know, we've had a long run with Pro Tools, which is kind of a de facto standard in some workflows and certain sort of subset of the music creation world. So do we got to talk about that, but we also have to pay attention to the fact that these things change. And, you know, I've gone through five or six different platforms that I've had to work with over the course of my career, and there will be another one. And it might be, you know, in a browser or whatever. So giving students enough time to develop expertise on what is now is really important, but they have to be agile and they have to understand the underlying concepts and understand what it is to sort of visualize an outcome and figure out what tools you need to use to get to that outcome, whether it's the simplest of tools or using new technologies.
Makes sense. Now, let me ask you this. You're a busy guy. You're juggling a lot of things. Even before we get on this call, you said, oh, you know, maybe I should take more time to relax. But yet you're not. You're going for it. You're out there and you're busy. How do you, you know, manage your time in this crazy world we're living in? You know, how do you prioritize things and make sure that you're focused on the right outcomes and deliverables?
It's not always easy. That's for sure. And I won't say I do a perfect job of it. You know, having goals and deadlines is a good thing. You know, when you're working in the world of product development, you know, then there's like release date is June 15th. Here's the roadmap. Here's the steps. You know, here's what we need to hit. And then features fall by the wayside as you want. You know, it's kind of like writing a book. It's like, okay, I'm going to leave that chapter out because the publisher needs a thing to go to press by blah, blah, blah date. So deadlines help. You know, time and money are always incredibly helpful because they set boundaries around things. And then, you know, I'm really sort of, I get really turned on by creativity and innovation. And if there's something that crosses my path that's really interesting, I'm going to make time for it. Whether it's working on like a really cool record, and I actually got a record later this month that somebody's doing that it's going to come out in all the formats. He wants to do 5.1. And it's a favorite artist of mine that I've collaborated with over the course of a couple of decades. I'm going to make time to do that record. Because, you know, it's not about the money. It's about, boy, do I want to be involved with this? And we're going to do something together that's exciting at NAMM that falls into this same category. And I think it's going to be a blast. And I don't know if you want to sort of, I don't want to give away too much, but I love the way you're encouraging people by putting this thing together to sort of bring forward innovation and give them a reason for hope to do new and interesting things.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm just super excited about this. Basically, yeah, so everybody that's listening knows what we're talking about. It's the first ever pitch competition at NAMM, and you know, NAMM is the National Association for Music Merchants, for those who don't know. And the point is, this is a show where you have all the newest music gear and technology that comes out, and it's great. And a lot of us get together and we talk, but it's this insular kind of circle. We're not necessarily as an industry talking about innovation. We're talking about the newest feature or the newest product or whatever. But we're not really talking about innovation as a whole. And this is an opportunity. I'm just so thankful. Jonathan said yes to be a judge on the panel where we're going to have five or six companies pitching their newest ideas. We'll have a panel of judges, including Jonathan, and anybody that's listening. Come on out and check it. Check it out. It's upstairs on the second floor of the NAMM show. But we'll also be doing something really fun, which is pouring some beer, free beer at NAMM ahead of this at the Triple G booth on the show floor. So that's a whole other thing. But the idea is, yeah, it is a party. It is a celebration of technology and innovation. And, you know, like you, Jonathan, like I'm all about, like, how can we get more people in music and creativity in this creator economy that we live in to do more around innovation and creativity, authenticity, all the things we were talking about before. So it's an exciting moment. I'll go back to the comment that you started this whole thing with. This is an exciting moment.
Yeah, it is. It's scary and it's exciting. Yes. And I guess those two things probably always go hand in hand, right?
They do. Yeah,
I think it's great. I mean, I think when people come to this thing, also they will learn. You know, you learn about business development thinking and you learn about product development thinking and, you know, taking a look at pitch decks over the years. It's always interesting to me, some of the really interesting perspectives that people bring when they have new ideas and some of the things they completely miss. And so I think this will be a great like information share and mind share.
I think so too. It's interesting, you know, like we have the fortunate benefit of looking at lots of pitch decks and seeing what's out there and how it all works. And as you do this over and over and over again, you realize, okay, there are certain things, pieces of information you need to know. The problem is there's no real common understanding of this specifically in the musical instrument, music tech world. There is, as you go into other circles that we live in and in, you know, consumer technology or, you know, other areas that we operate in. But, you know, I think for the music products and music tech industry, it's going to be a really great way for everybody to kind of get a common knowledge understanding. So hey, let's see what happens. Let's have some fun. But back to you. Where do you think the future of music, what does that look like to you? I know that's a real crazy question, but I gotta ask.
Yeah, well, it's impossible to answer on one hand, but on the other hand, there are constants, right? I mean, the desire to be creative and to succeed while being creative is a constant, no matter what the platform. And so I don't think that goes away. I do think that technology does reduce, let's just say it changes the kind of expertise one needs in order to be creative, right? I mean, you know, 300 years ago, you had to like learn how to play the oboe if you wanted to like play in an orchestra or something, which, you know, took years of a certain kind of practice. Now I think we're practicing different things when we think about being creative. I think the way that the instruments that we're working with are responding to us, you know, it could be by verbal commands or gestural commands, or it could be, you know, in a UI and a user interface on a computer screen that is like a metadata representation or a meta representation of a musical thing that we can react to. You know, we're going to start seeing systems that will learn us so that they will become personalized and they feel like our partners in creativity. So I think that the ways that we interact with the tools that we're using is changing and will continue to change. And I think, you know, that's where we need to pay attention and find out what's useful and what's not useful. But I think underneath it all, right, it's really a desire to be expressive and creative. I think it's a very human activity. And people want to see if they can like make a profession out of it or make, I mean, there's also a huge market out there of people who just love doing it because they love doing it. It's like, you know, probably if you took a look at all the people who take woodworking classes just because they want to learn how to make themselves a chair, that's probably a lot of people. You know, it's not just the furniture makers who are going to, you know, put something up on Wayfair or something like that. So, so that's what I see.
It's a great point. I have to ask this question too. What do you think about just advice that you might give to two different groups? One, an artist that might be emerging and trying to figure out how to navigate this time. And then the second being, a entrepreneur, business professional, leader of product, whatever, because it's a crazy time. Like, you know, it's hard to know where to go and how to get started and where to focus, you know, so an artist and an entrepreneur, what do you think?
Well, I think in both cases, I think the answer is find the right people to collaborate with. I think it's really hard to succeed as an artist if you're just in a room by yourself, not interacting with the world. I think for so many reasons, you can't be great at everything all by yourself. Also, you know, getting stuck in it. I mean, being stuck in an echo chamber can be problematic. If you don't get outside perspective on what you're doing and get sometimes that difficult but necessary gut check about, like, what do you think you're doing? How is it that you're sort of trying to succeed? Who are you trying to be? And making sure that to some extent you've got a plan that's reality based, as opposed to, you know, just some abstracted idea. I think for people who are working in product, you know, this particular, you said something earlier, which I totally agree with, which is there's a lot of wisdom out there about how to build roadmaps that work in markets. But in our market, we don't seem to have quite that same degree of wisdom. And I think very often it's because people try to take, like, the MBA education and the tried and true business models and map it to music and create a sort of a creative lifestyle kind of marketplace. Unless you have people who really understand the market and the marketplace, it's really hard to make it work, unless you're just trying to sell widgets. And even that, like, you know, guitar picks or something like that. I guess if you made, like, the coolest guitar pick, you could sell a lot of those, but that's not really interesting. So, you know, I think it's finding the right people to work with and making sure that you understand your audience. You know, and again, it's that's sort of true of both.
Yeah, it's so true. I think understanding your audience is pivotal in any of this. But I think right now more than ever, it's really important to start from there and almost work backwards, right? Understand what problems you're really solving. You identified that earlier. I think that's spot on.
Yeah, I do think agility is important. I think understanding what it means to take risks, being willing to take risks at the right times, is really important. And understanding what it, you know, reading the tea leaves when it's time to pivot and make a change. And this is something that we did over and over again at iZotope. We were willing to take some chances and take some risks on certain product releases. We had some hits, we had some misses, tried to learn and move on. But I think that's part of what makes it all exciting. And I think, you know, again, it's true of songwriting, right? It's true of being an artist and taking chances. And I think it's also true, especially in the sort of modern world of product.
Yeah. No,
you know, unless you're dealing with a legacy brand. I mean, if you're Moog and everybody knows the word Moog, and you could sell hats that say Moog, and, like, you could probably sell a lot of hats.
Right, exactly. Well said. You know, what is there one question that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you yet?
Here's the thing that I care about a lot and I don't have an answer for. And that is, you know, given that artists have always needed to be entrepreneurs, but it's true now more than ever. And it's increasingly difficult for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, the erosion of the creative economy, I think, it, at least in terms of traditional models, is clearly, you know, underway. And so, you know, how are we going to be able to support people in the risk-taking and in, you know, being able to innovate and really sort of invest in that while they're trying to keep the lights on, whatever that means. And of course, you know, the starving artist is something that we're familiar with that story.
Of course.
But I think the starving is harder now and more ubiquitous. And I think, you know, the questions around AI and ownership of your work, I think, are just going to kind of accelerate this phenomenon. Like, how do you monetize your own voice, you know, or your own sort of persona when you're competing with, you know, sort of commodified AI sort of created version of an artist? I don't have an answer for those things, but I think those are the big questions that I see right now. You know, and I think we need to really dig in and think deeper about how we're going to wrap our arms around this. It's not really a technological issue,
right?
As much as it is about, you know, sort of a marketplace issue. So I think that's the question that we should be talking about.
I love it. I'm with you. I think we have a lot more questions. Well, you'll have to come back and we'll have to keep talking about this, Jonathan. As I got to tell you, this has really been a lot of fun. You know, while we're kind of coming to the close of our session here, I'm curious, where can people find you if they're, you know, super enthusiastic the way I am about this conversation? You know, where can they find you? Where they can they connect with you and or learn more?
Cool. Well, you know, I'll be at NAMM. You usually find me at NAMM or the Audio Engineering Society convention, and presenting, and you know, I'll have something of a profile in both those places. You can find me at Berklee College of Music, both online. I've written a couple of courses there. I've written a book about mastering, and I also teach at the Brick and Mortar School. And you could find me in June at the AI and the Musician Symposium in Boston that we're putting together. So you could find me there, or you could find me at MWorks Mastering Studios, which has been my my home for my creative work since well, the last century and then some. So all those places, that's where you'll, or you'll find me right here on the internet.
Amazing.
Talking to you.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait to get together with you at NAMM and many of these other places as well. We're going to have a lot of fun and a lot more to talk about. I will tell you, Jonathan, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to, you know, share your, I mean, absolute wealth of knowledge and experience with us. You know, with for any of our listeners, please don't forget to share, like, subscribe, all that social media good stuff, because there's a lot more to listen to. And Jonathan, really, you know, you capitalize on this thought and this notion that we have of success at scale. I mean, here it is, guys. So thank you so much for being here, Jonathan, and everyone else. Thank you so much for listening. And until we see you next time, peace.